As we have spent time this evening reflecting on Jesus' suffering and humiliation and torture, it often makes us sick to our stomachs. In our video, which was shown a bit earlier tonight, Adam Hamilton talked briefly about what the process of flogging was like in the first century AD. Some of you may know from Mel Gibson's portrayal in The Passion of Christ that he had a very graphic portrayal of what it was to be flogged in that time. When that movie first came out a number of years ago, I decided that it would be informational and interesting for us to take a group from church to go and watch The Passion of the Christ. But if you're going to take a group to anything, you probably should preview it first. And so I went and previewed the movie and watched the movie through once. And then when it came time to take the group, I realized I was not able to bear it a second time. When we really understand and experience the graphic nature of what Jesus experienced as he was flogged, as a crown of thorn was placed on his head, it was too much to bear. And so the second time when I went to the movie, I took my Bible with me and watched the movie like this. As I would try and see, is that really in the Bible? Is that in the Bible? I could hear it and I could recall the images, and that was more than enough. Sometimes it becomes overwhelming to realize how much pain Jesus suffered for our sake. All it says in Scripture is that Jesus was flogged. But many of us cannot begin to imagine what that truly means until we watch portrayals or hear descriptions such as Adam Hamilton shared with us about what the process of flogging was like in the first century. A very horrific experience. We began to ask ourselves, how can someone do that to another person? It makes us sick to our stomach to even watch it. You can't imagine how anyone would ever do that. We start to think they must be monsters. And yet, as we look much more deeply, we find that oftentimes the monster that we think we see in them is actually within us as well. In college, I was a psychology major, and we had a number of different experiments that we learned about, classic experiments in psychology, experiments about the human condition, about who we were as people. And two of the most famous ones about the human capacity for violence are the Zimbardo prison experiment and the Milgram obedience experiment. In the Zimbardo prison experiment, this was in 1971, Zimbardo was a professor at Stanford, and so he hired 24 college students, and he randomly assigned 12 of these college students to be guards and 12 of them to be prisoners in this experiment. And so this experiment went into play, and it was determined by a flip of a coin if you would be a guard or if you would be a prisoner. The prisoners, once they were determined, were arrested. The police came to their house, hauled them away, booked them, charged them, just like all other prisoners were treated at that time. And then they were taken to jail, knowing that they would be there for 14 days. What they found was that this experiment had to be called off after only 6 days. Because these college students who had taken on the role of the guards took on their role so enthusiastically that they began to hurt, oppress, and were extremely violent toward the prisoners. These were fellow students. The only way that made them different was the flip of a coin. There was nothing that separated the guards and the prisoners except random chance and luck. And yet, they found that as they lived into these roles, the prisoners took on the role of abuse, of separation, depression, isolation, and an inability to fight back. And those who were the guards so fully embraced their role to make sure that the prisoners stayed subdued that they lost sight of the fact that this was an experiment. They were told that this was part of an experiment, that they were in a psychology study. But by day six, every person had embraced the role they had been given so fully that they were afraid that there would be permanent harm done to those who were participating. And so they called off the experiment. In the Milgram obedience experiment, which was done in 1964, this was done by random people they offered on the street. They asked random volunteers on the street. They said, we'll give you $4. I think that was a lot in 1964. For 1 hour, and their task was to sit in front of dials or gauges, and they were told that they would deliver shock to someone if they got the wrong answer. So there was someone who was asking them a question, and if the person got the wrong answer, they were to shock the person so that they would then hopefully give the right answer the next time. So they found out, again, that what happened was they brought these people in the room, and then again, it appeared to be a random chance that one person would be the one shocked, and the one person would be the one who was administering the shock, but actually, the one receiving the shock was always the same person. And so they told them what the standard was, and so the person was sent into another room. They couldn't see the person, but they could hear what was going on, so they could hear what they got the answer right or wrong. And then there was someone who was administering the survey with them in the room with them, and so in the room with the person who was shocking. And so what they found was they wanted to see how far people would go if there was an authority figure, someone in a white lab coat standing next to you, that told you that you must go on increasing force until fatal levels. They thought that probably 1% of the population would actually increase the amount of shock given till fatal levels. What they found was 65% of the people would continue to increase the shock given until near fatal levels. It was so shocking. It would happen that despite apparent cries of pain coming from the other room, they would say, I can't do this, and the authority would say, no, you must do this. And they said, no, I just can't. And they said, yes, this is part of the commitment that you have made to this experiment. You must continue to administer. And they said, I'm not sure I can do this. And it would continue down. And they found that 65% of the people continued. They had a dial until when it got to the point, and they could see as it was increasing. And at 450 volts, it said, dangerous, near lethal levels. And at 450 volts, 65% of the people continued to administer shock, even though they heard screams of cries from the other room. And when the cries went silent, they continued to administer the shocks. It was a shocking experiment, so far from what they had anticipated would be, but points to the true level of our human condition, about who we are, about the fact that even ordinary people would kill a seemingly innocent person if an authority told them to do it. Obedience is ingrained into us, the very way that we are brought up to obey what we are told. And so as we begin to reflect on this humiliation, this suffering, this torture that Jesus experienced, we say, who would do this to Jesus? And the answer is, we would. You and I would. We follow authority figures. We do what we're told. We fill roles in our lives and we live into those roles, whatever those roles may be. And so we do this to Jesus. This last fall, when I was on the women's retreat, one of the spiritual practices is a very simple spiritual practice, but has been a powerful spiritual practice for me to incorporate into my life. And it's called the Just Like Me spiritual practice. Whenever you find yourself thinking poorly about another person, judging them, saying bad things, you add three words at the end. Just like me. That driver is such a bad driver, they always cut people off. Just like me. It makes you stop and think about all the times maybe you were running late and trying to get somewhere, and you might have done the same thing. that person never follows through on their word, just like me. And again, made to think about those times that you had not kept your word, intended to, but something happened, and you were unable to keep your word. Or they're always trying to make themselves look better, paint the truth in a different way. It's just all lies. Just like me. Again, reflecting on all of those times in which we similarly try to paint ourselves in a better light. It's a really powerful spiritual practice as you begin to embrace it, because it makes you take a really long, hard look at yourself. And I've found that as I have been using this spiritual practice, there are many parts of myself that I begin to acknowledge or see as I turn the lens on me. I'm forced to look at myself instead of looking at others. And so as we reflect on these soldiers who are torturing Jesus, soldiers who have been told, this is a common criminal, an insurrectionist, a rebel who says he's a king. How could they do this? We wonder how they could do this to Jesus. They're so violent, just like me. We're there too. We're there with the soldiers. But what the most amazing part of this whole story is Jesus' response in the midst of this. Jesus does not condemn them. Jesus is silent. Jesus is walking a journey away to the cross, a painful road of suffering. And when he gets on the cross, Jesus cries out, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. These are cries for us, because we do not know what we are doing. Jesus cries out for my forgiveness and for your forgiveness. Jesus died for our forgiveness. Jesus died on the cross just for me.